Hello and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also known as the Marvelous H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel, also known as the Extraordinarily Ordinary Q.
The Extraordinary.
That's right. Yeah, nothing special about Q this week anyway.
We'll see about that. We'll see how our pitches come in, and maybe we'll find something special.
All right.
Very deep inside.
Yeah, open mind. I love it. I should have that about myself more often, but, you know, sometimes I just feel like a regular old person.
So I'm feeling a bit grumpy today. I hope that doesn't come through on the recording, but if I snap at you, apologies in advance.
What's going on? Why are you grumped out?
I just didn't sleep well. You know, I've got a bunch of, moving stuff going on, so I'm getting all my boxes packed up and everything, and, you know, just... You know, stuff is keeping me up later than I should be and waking me up earlier than I should have to. So next week, I'll be sitting pretty in a brand new spot over in the next city over. But for now, it's a little burning the candle on both ends, so to speak.
Is it apocalyptic? Are you like sleeping in a stripped down bed that has nothing except for like a sheet and a pillow on it?
No, unfortunately, the only thing stripped down in my bed is me.
Whoa. You heard it here first, folks, a Playwright exclusive.
That's right. Kanan Arince has been really, really privy to leak that info, but I know, had to keep it as an exclusive for Playwright.
Personally, I'm on your side in this. I can't edit a podcast unless I am in the nude, so I'm right there with you.
Well, let's get to our video game pitches today. I think that's as good a segue as we're going to get.
Perfect.
So what I'm going to do is pitch a gameplay system that I think doesn't work very well, but I really liked it, and see if we can find a way to kind of like turn something that I think I uniquely and nobody else liked into something universal. So let's see how this goes. I have made no secret that I prefer the first original Xbox Star Wars Battlefront to its sequel, Star Wars Battlefront 2. For the kids in the audience, not the ones you're thinking of, like the proper old good ones that are running on like PS2, Xbox, PC, maybe GameCube? I don't remember. But I'm a big fan of Star Wars Battlefront, the original. And what one of the things I really like about that is the air-to-ground combat. It's these small little maps by, you know, modern standards. Everything is kind of like fairly compact, big enough to have kind of army scale battles on, but definitely not the types of like sprawling expanses you see in like a Battlefield 4 or something like that. Ships are always too fast and the courses are too small to fly effectively, and really the only objective in the Star Wars Battlefront game is to wipe out the highest number of enemy units. So you are trying to essentially either take out the other fighters in the sky, but more pressingly, you're trying to take out units that are on the ground. They are, like I said, too fast, and the course is too small to fly effectively, but they're very powerful. So you just have to make like super constricted and extremely high-risk bombing runs by kind of flying to the edge of the map, circling around, kind of angling down towards the ground, firing your very powerful blasters for as long as you can before you have to pull up, before you run into something or the edge of the map. And so, you know, basically you're not able to get that much firepower concentrated on the ground, but it's, I don't know, I always found it kind of engaging. It felt very high risk, high reward, and I liked it. So perhaps a game about crop dusting or something similar. Like, I just want a similar kind of air-to-ground type of combat system that emphasizes making, like, quick little swooping runs before having to pull up. So I'm going to start the clock there.
In my head, I'm kind of picturing this as, like, a really aggressive arena dogfighter. Is there, like, thought that this could take place in, like, a sphere?
Sphere could work.
I'm just thinking of something like Crash In Everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. I think with a sphere, you have the possibility of kind of perpetual motion without ever having to really change course, because the ground is always not flat, but it is kind of adjusting to you. There's no like end point. So you don't necessarily have to do the pull up, but I do like 3D combat in a like the inside of a sphere. Like that's cool by itself, with the ability to kind of like aim at folks on the other end of the sphere. But anyways, yeah. So I do want to maintain the risk of crashing, and I don't know if a sphere fully gets us there.
Like in your head, is this all like very stick based, and you're really trying to articulate your articulate your joystick up and down and like pull off risky maneuvers, or is it maybe a little bit more like Star Foxy, like pressing down and, you know, C down and you'll automatically, you know, pull a 180 or something?
I'm okay with it being kind of arcadey. You know, whatever, I think whatever adjustments we can make to make it more playable, if you think of it like a Star Fox game, where instead of trying to take out other enemy units in the air, you're trying to take out folks on the ground, then that might be a good way in for those who haven't played Star Wars Battlefront.
I think that's interesting. One thing that I do see in the Star Wars fiction that I don't often feel like I am seeing in video game dogfighting games is like blowing up a ship and having like their pieces be debris. If you're going fast enough, like you potentially need to dodge your way through an enemy kill.
Yeah, that's a good point. It would be neat to have kind of a destruction simulator modeled on these kind of outer space. I love Star Wars having these giant building size or planet sized starships that are floating around, the big Star Destroyers, and then like Darth Vader's like Ultra Star Destroyer, and like the ones in The Last Jedi, like super cool. I'm really into the battles of that scale.
Now I'm trying to think about like how these things typically feel, and if there's like, are you going for a laser based combat or more of a machine gunny based?
Functionally, they're pretty similar, right? What is the distinction mechanically?
Well, I'm thinking that lasers, you know, you have potentially like burn mechanics, and being hit and stuff could like overheat the ship in various ways, in a way that potentially doing something where you're doing straight up bullets, you're really just kind of tearing apart the hulls of these vessels.
That's pretty interesting. I like floating debris, which seems to necessitate a space setting. I don't know the science of how bullets would work in space, and so if lasers are the only way to do it, maybe you can have lasers that have more of a corrosive effect rather than more of kind of a bullet effect of kind of stripping apart enemy ships rather than something that, I don't know, if Star Wars, they just kind of like lose HP until they explode.
Right. Okay. What's the environmental twist that we can play in this? I know we're talking about pure speed, but I'm thinking about those sort of Star Fox Super Nintendo levels where there was almost like polygonal geometry jutting and floating in various ways. I love the idea of Star Wars has a lot of scenes that kind of take place in an asteroid belt, but what if you had those sort of cylindrical object belts like you get in Star Fox? I just like the idea of them sort of flying in left and right sideways and being additional things that you're sort of trying to dodge in this high speed chase, or even like someone wants to escape you, kind of going into one of those Star Fox SNES like Andross, or even like, to use Star Wars, like the Millennium Falcon. What if somebody could try and escape you chasing them by like going into the Death Star trench and creating like something where you're not dodging lasers and turrets and stuff from everything else?
Well, that's another thing, is that you get a similar type of bombing run experience in a lot of Star Wars games when you're trying to take out like laser defense turrets on Star Destroyers. There's a lot of that kind of risk reward of flying into a gun that's shooting at you, firing everything you have at it and pulling away at the last second, because like they always balance it in such a way that you can like just barely destroy it before you have to pull away.
Yeah.
And I like, you know, if we are destroying Star Destroyers and spaceships and stuff like that, then it does make sense to have these non-natural shapes flying out into the world, because, you know, they are made of spaceships, essentially, and there's all sorts of different pieces. There's the circular shapes from the thrusters in the back, and there's triangular shapes from this and that. And so, you know, I think you can get away with introducing more interesting dodgeable debris than if it was just a rock being blown apart or something like that.
If this is truly a Star Wars game, is there a chance for us to bring the Force into it?
How so? I've never seen the Force used in,
in ship
space
combat
except for people closing their eyes and getting a good shot.
Well, I'm just thinking about like how, and maybe this is not a good reference point, but how over the top and comical, sort of crazy the powers were in something like Force Unleashed, or even, you know, the sort of episode one, mm-hmm. two, and three trilogy of movies. And could you force, like, invert someone's controls for just like half a second? Or could you force push a vehicle like to the right or to the left by expending some energy? So instead of having like bombs or powers, you're kind of Jedi mind tricking the pilot for a second.
I would like if you had to keep them like centered in your crosshairs, and so there was like a real risk to doing it as well.
Yeah, you got to be looking like right at the person. That's interesting.
If my controls are being messed with, I would like it to kind of like go in and out.
Oh, like it'll feel like you're, especially if you're wiggling all around, it'll feel like you are like fighting the other person for
right.
control of your
yeah.
ship.
Yeah, exactly. And trying to escape. Like there's, I feel like one of the ways that, and I'm not like an expert in dogfighting video games by any means or measure.
I thought you were going to say you're not an expert in the Force.
I am an expert in the Force. Oh, okay. I am a Sith master. But I'm not an expert in dogfighting video games. I've not played that many of them. But of the ones that I have played, I've always felt like avoiding enemy fire has been a major letdown mechanically. Like they'll give you usually like a barrel roll button, which will get you out of trouble, but it just feels really, it just feels like a get out of trouble button. It doesn't feel like you're really doing anything. I don't know. It feels uninteresting. And I really like more the kind of like dodging and weaving, but at the same time, it's hard to keep that balance up, because for the enemy's bullets to feel impactful, then they have to be doing, you know, pretty significant damage to your ship. And so by the time that you've really kind of like, from your perspective, adjusted to the point where you can like dodge and weave and predict where they're going to be aiming, like you're probably pretty much destroyed at that point anyways. It's a difficult perspective to balance for.
That's interesting. I'm trying to think about like, because also so much of the like Star Fox mechanics or dogfighting mechanics in games are about looping around, and they're trying to like get you essentially behind the person, right? Get you better positioning in regards to your opponent. So I wonder if there's like, if you did bring the Force into it, that your Force energy is like an additional layer of articulation onto the ship. So maybe the Force energy is like time slows down for you, or you become super maneuverable for a second. And so you're always making choices between like improving your own controls in order to gain position, or to sort of thwart your enemies through, you know, control hijacks or unexpected things. And maybe the name of the game is just as much get them to crash and make a mistake as it is, you know, almost like, you know, pod racing as it is to survive.
Nice. Well, let's close that down. Let's come up with a name. This has to be a Star Wars game. I feel like we've talked so much Star Wars that we really owe it to them at this point.
Walt Disney Presents. There's so many good like squadrons and stuff in Star Wars, I figure, or fleets or something like that.
I like the term destroyer, picking up from Star Destroyers. You're kind of a Star Destroyer destroyer, so I wonder if Star Wars Destroyer would just be like a good enough encapsulation.
I think you could do that. You could also do like Destroyers and have the cover be like five popular Star Wars ships and everyone's like, oh, okay, cool.
Okay. Star Wars Destroyers. That will be coming as soon as Disney pulls the license from EA.
This is what I like, H. Now we're finally getting that SEO juice. We got Star Wars coming in. This is going to be great.
All right. Q, what do you have for us today? Let's keep that SEO juice flowing.
Well, unfortunately, we went from the most popular thing to a weird indie avant-garde pitch here. I was thinking, would it be interesting to have a game that was maybe a little bit like Spore Creature Creator, but you were trying
to... A frequent companion here on Playwright.
That's true, yeah. Everybody playing PW Bingo is going nuts here. But I would really like to have something where you're playing maybe narratively a parent who is reading a bedtime story to their child, and as the child is... describing the monster that they imagine, or maybe they're coming to you and describing the monster under their bed, you have to not quite police sketch it, but spore creature create it into accuracy for the child. So you're trying to design the things of nightmares.
I like it. Very good. Let's start the clock. So let's think of an objective. I think that the what we do is very funny. I like this a lot. I would like giving a, it's kind of like a game of telephone. Somebody's describing something to you, perhaps using like childlike sentence structure. So not everything fully checks out and you're doing your best to reproduce it. Is the wind condition getting close enough to what they described, or is the wind condition it being a viable creature? Like as far as walking around and trying to battle against other things that people have described, you know, how do we balance like keeping people honest with following the intended design versus like giving the monster something to do?
Maybe after like creating the creature, you could do like a narrative, almost telltale like segment where you ask the child things about the creature and they tell you what they could do. And then like it's you and the computer co-authoring the creature, you and the machine, you know, whatever the mechanics of the game, you and the game co-author the creature. And maybe then you like can put them into like the Psychonauts equivalent of Skylanders and like run around and play an adventure game in the dreams of your child.
What if there's like a battle simulator and kind of like BattleBots, the TV show where people build robots and make them fight each other. And so the first stage of this multiplayer battle, a versus battle, is the child describing the monster to you. You use that description to build the monster to as close of specifications as you can. Afterwards, you say you're done with the monster. Maybe there's a really strict time limit on it. And the child checks how close the monster is to what he or she described. And then for every inaccuracy, that part is removed from the monster. And then you and the person you're playing against have to battle whatever you have. And so like part of it is guided by kind of luck of the, you know, whatever kind of random variables are causing this child's description to describe it in a certain way. Also causes you to kind of think on your feet because every monster will control a little bit differently. But at the same time, you can't just optimize it for, you can't just build like 100 flamethrowers on its back and ignore what the child is saying, because if you get something wrong, then that's a major penalty. You know, you get that stripped away from the monster. So really like you're trying to get it right and you're trying to do your best with whatever you have.
So now I'm in a scenario where like I'm going into battle this thing. If it doesn't have legs, it's kind of like a rolling creature.
Yeah, potentially. I like in Spore Creature Creator, they always kind of figure out how a creature is going to move and attack and talk and mate and all this stuff. So, you know, I'm sure that if we use a similar engine or, you know, whatever, it could figure out some way to make this thing look emote.
I think that's cool. I do like too, if the phase where the child is making requests, they're coming in like a child would, and he had green hair. Oh, well, he also had this and this, like it's happening so quickly. And so you're just, you know, maybe it's even like this is a game for streamers. It's so comical how fast you have to assemble the monster that like, oh, I missed, you know, after that when you show it to the kids, oh, is it like this? And they're like, no, daddy, I said it had purple legs, and the legs just go bang, and they just like flash away. That's kind of funny. And now you can play with the humor of like how weird child, like you almost have like an episode of Nailed It essentially in a video game.
So you have to be quick, you have to be accurate, and you have to always be thinking of like what is the optimal way to assemble these items, because once they're placed on the monster, maybe you can't move them. So, you know, once the legs are on there, you better be conscious of where you previously put the weapons and the head, because if you messed up, it's going to be, you know, the monster's going to be that much more vulnerable when you get to the battle stage.
I wonder too if, like, if the child says no on things, or if there's like a mechanic of like between rounds of the battle, you could say things, assuming there, you could put rounds and then ask the child, like, you know, what else, Janet, what else, Timmy or whatever? And they come at you with like, oh, he could breathe fire, you know, and like suddenly your kid could like grant a buff, but then like throughout a match be like, oh, I meant boogers, and like just suddenly change your powers on you.
Can't imagine which one I would like less.
Breathing fire or breathing boogers?
Yeah.
I do like the idea of everything being like a status effect. So taking all those kids and like, he was very stinky, and like stinky is like you release clouds that are damage over time, and boogers are like slowing mechanics on the enemy. You just leave a trail of gunk. Almost like, didn't Rad come out recently from Double Fine?
Yeah.
This feels like it could be a Double Fine game in many ways.
Yeah, definitely. So let's think of what types of arenas would these battles happen in. You know, I want something kind of fanciful that would fit like a child's imagination.
Oh.
I mean, if the arenas could change over time as well, you know, maybe from like a city being taken over by robots, or something that would just be, you know, fun for the kids.
If the theme of the game is like child's imagination and things transforming and like being actualized from the child's imagination, I think it would be so fun to see in a game just like synced up in real time, like the parent talking to the child and like, what else happened? And they're like, well, then the buildings went bam, and like the, you know, there's actually a dramatic explosion during the match. And he's like, but it's because they turned upside down, and you get that sort of, do you know, Drunk History?
Yeah.
You get that sort of moment that you get in Drunk History where like something happens, but like quickly is undone to correct itself from the sort of incoherent person. That could be sort of funny. You'd be like, oh, so the building exploded. He went, no, the buildings turned to jello. And you're like, oh, okay. And then very quickly pop.
Yeah. And so all of this is basically like thinking on your feet. This wouldn't be necessarily a competitive fighting game at Evo, but I do like this kind of...
This is child-based levolution.
Yeah, exactly.
What does winning look like here? I know it's, you can defeat the other opponent, but like, maybe the whole thing is not necessarily based on your opponent's health, but rather how entertained you're keeping the child along the way. Like, you could do something where the focus is mainly on making sure that you're constantly staying in action, or you're, you know, earnestly trying to engage with the changes that that are being put before you. That all of that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, you know, maybe we can pull in an idea that we've used before of you can knock off enemy limbs and attach them to yourselves. Of course, that kind of tilts the favor in the tilts the match in the favor of the person who's already winning. So I don't know if I love that, but maybe they bleed candy that you can pick up, or they could pick back up themselves. I don't know. There's lots of ways to make this very kid friendly while still kind of maintaining some of that essential violence.
Yeah. And I mean, it could also just be that instead of, you know, going full on, hey, this is a technical fighting game, if it had an element to it that was a little bit more Mario Party mini game, where sections of the level are falling away and stuff, is like the dream is coming to a close or something like that, or the imagination, the idea is ending. Like, you could just do mostly environmental like obstacles, and depending on how well you've managed your limbs and stuff, you'll get really good at doing the limbs, I think, over time. But it would be funny to see your character. Well, I don't have legs, and it seems like there's going to be a lot of jumping in this one.
All right, let's close that down. Let's come up with a title for this imaginative game.
What if we just call it something like Stuff of Nightmares?
I feel like that's a very different game.
Is it Stuff of Dreams?
If this is kind of pitched like a sporting event, like a national monster fighting league or something, we can call it Imaginational Monster Fighting League.
Imaginational. That's pretty good. IMFL, the IMFL.
That's kind of a fun acronym as well.
And then we can spell it out underneath because people definitely won't know what the heck that means.
Okay. Well, I think that's a fun pitch. It's very, has a lot of course, imagination to it. All right, let's go now to the community. Going back to our Twitter. So Davis Barber requested on Twitter a single player RPG taking place entirely from within an IKEA. Think the Elder Scrolls IKEA. We're going to start the clock there.
My buddy Davis, so good to hear from you. For people that don't know, Davis was one of my co-hosts on Pixels Weekly. So now we have complete fusion that he's somehow made it onto this show without even having to do a dang recording. What do we think about this thing? You can definitely get lost in an IKEA.
Yeah, there are challenges, though, because IKEAs are flat, segmented areas as opposed to the kind of like mountainous, more traditionally adventurous terrains of Elder Scrolls type games. So, you know, willing to work within those boundaries, but maybe we can really kind of play up the fantasy like magical realism in a way where like an Alice in Wonderland type thing where like things look ordinary, but then kind of the closer you get to things or the farther you get into a particular room, the more kind of supernatural or odd and bizarre they become.
I also like the idea of going very specific to IKEA and having something where somebody has to assemble their way around mm-hmm. and climb up giant IKEA assembled mountains. So if you took an IKEA itself, but, you know, went very dramatic on the scale of what an IKEA is in terms of like building height, maybe the only way to escape certain sections, they're a totally closed loop until you build your way out of them.
Or maybe all of the items, like the weapons and the armor, you would have to assemble and you would have to follow kind of confusing instructions. And once you lock something into place, like it is stuck in place. And so like you really have to kind of be careful and maybe learn from your mistakes, three or four of the same swords into it. And then every item has like a separate installation manual. And so it's kind of like learning the useful items and kind of you're improving your items by getting new kits of the same thing and just assembling it better next time.
Oh, also potentially, what do you think of it? You can assemble items, kind of mesh them together.
Yeah, there we go.
If you took those items, well, this might be going in a different thing than what you were thinking, but what if you could like essentially set up a living room or a bedroom and it became like a portal to another place, like based on the aesthetic that you had set up, like, oh, if I get all the modern stuff or the like Japanese inspired stuff in one thing, then I can go off and have a little almost like Elder Scrolls Online sort of instanced off island of Elder Scrolls adventure in the theme of the living room I assembled.
Or I really love to go back to the Alice in Wonderland example. I really love Alice Madness Returns on the PS3, Xbox 360, PC. Just because like every level was like a hyper thematic, very, you know, lush visually and very like specific to particular thematic elements, whether it's kind of a Japanese painterly theme or, a theme of like, of a deep forest, with like marbles and dice and other types of like handheld equipment. But it's all based on like things that Alice had observed in the real world before going into this kind of dream sequence. And so, you know, maybe there are elements of each of these different designs. And as you enter the fantasy world, of course, like it would retain very specific, I know this is kind of parroting what you said, but just giving more context around it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Aspects of the design of those real world items into this fantasy space.
It would be really cool to also be, you know, we've all been sent on a fetch quest in an RPG. They're rarely fun, but being sent on a fetch quest to go find something on the other side of an IKEA and like maybe you bring in some survival mechanics. You got to like go and like get a batch of meatballs or a Cinnabon and stuff to get different buffs. Like, oh, okay, the assembling concentration buff. I need to be jacked up on sugar in order to put this desk together.
I think a survival game, to pitch something completely different, a traditional survival game in an IKEA is a very funny idea. Like whether it's after hours or whether just the people around you ignore you, like having to set up a place to sleep and find like wood to build a fire and find food, trying to scavenge from around the store. Like that has an inherent comedy to it as well.
Oh my goodness. Especially if you did something where you can kind of do like not a scare mechanic, but that sort of horror mechanic where like you could be caught at any instance, mm-hmm. at any instant by like an IKEA employee, if they find out you're living there, or yeah, you could put this back in the Elder Scrolls thing. You suddenly become like Mr. X, like stalked by IKEA employees. And so you're constantly trying to duck and hide. And I think you could have a mountainous section in like that very last throw of IKEA that is all just like the shipping boxes of items. There's a lot of scaling and ladders and stuff to be done there.
There's also a lot of perhaps improvised combat is something you pull into this. I would just love to see like how a Jackie Chan movie fight would take place in an IKEA, as he has to pull upon all of the furniture and the bunk bed ladders and everything around him, you know?
You know, let's say that this IKEA is in reasonable disarray. If you have to go get a leg from a chair that's on the other side of the store to go repair this particular chair called, like, you know, they'll all be those weird sort of IKEA sort of Swedish names.
Uh-huh.
You get like halfway through and there's like a little goblin child thing that like tries to steal the leg from you, and now you're on this like hunt to go find the kid that like put the leg, because like essentially even if they hide it on you, IKEA itself, probably looking at so many sections of this building, is going to look like an I Spy almost.
And then you could also have a changing geometry as you're not looking at an area, a hallway could disappear or something like that.
Yeah. And every day, now we've got our sort of daily Majora's Mask reset or whatever. Every day as people buy and return things to the store, the geometry is changing and shifting, and as employees clean up sections of the store, like it's never the same store 2 days in a row, and they're constantly trying to reorganize it or bring in new products. So you're like, oh my God, the spoons used to be down in this section and now they're over here. It's really messing me up.
What other aspects? So there's the furniture shop, there's the cafeteria. Is there anything else interesting about an IKEA that we can pull into this? I mean, there is the kind of like Dark Souls, like shortcuts between areas, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The little like hidden paths or whatever.
Yeah.
I was also thinking that, yeah, can you imagine, like, oh, I push through these doors and it wraps around this other section. It's actually perfect. Is there something we can do with the line? Because I feel like every time I've gone to an IKEA, a significant part of IKEA is just waiting in that massive line. And there's always like 4 or 5 different lines where you're like, they all seem super long and I don't know which one to pick. Is there any way to gamify that and like say that you have to, like you also have to make it through line before the shop closes or something?
Possibly, except I think if you're trying to find the exit the whole time and you just run out of time while you're staying in line, I can imagine that being extremely frustrating as a player.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Kind of like lessening the tension, taking control away from the player at the time when it should be the most tense. Anyways, I think we're just about out of time. Let's go ahead and call this one.
Okay.
Speaking of which, what are we going to call this one?
Oh, IKEA Souls.
I mean, if we want to do like a Skyrim riff, we could do Skykia.
Skykia.
Or Dykia to make it sound more threatening.
I wonder also if there's like a way to like...
Pangea, Pankia, I don't know.
what about, is it too abstracted to like take the word IKEA and like try to call it like the Elder Scrolls Ikegard or something like that?
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. They're going to name it like a, like an Elder Scrolls region.
Yeah. You can even keep the A and have it be one of like weirdly, just put one of those weird IKEA pronunciation things. I'm sounding so culturally ignorant. I know it's Swedish, everybody. Just, it's fine.
They have the fish and the meatballs. We understand.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. Well, that is quite a game. Thank you very much for submitting that. If you would like to submit a game pitch of your own, you can do so by tweeting us at PlayWrightCast. Like so many of you have, you can email us, playwrightcast@gmail.com, or you can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song. Putting a little spin on it this week because it always sounds the same. Hello World off the album Blue Noise. Speaking of little spins, there's a lot more discography to go check out from our good friend Protodome. And of course, special thank you to the Cane and Rinse Network. And I think this time, instead of me telling you about the shows, why don't you go to caneandrinse.com, check out the homepage, click on all the little things in the latest post, check out. There's so much going on there. There's blogging, there's podcasts, there's a shop. You can support them on Patreon. I'm just exhausted thinking about it. And it's so much video game content, and it's all great.
Right. And to take us out of the show, I'm going to come up with a miniature pitch. You know, I think that there's still a lot of people reeling from the pain of Fallout 76, but I'm sure Fallout 77 is going to get it all right. I just have to wait for that next one.
True story. I was at a wedding and my cousin said, I think I'm done with Fallout 76, man. That game stinks. I played it for like 300 hours.
Did you play the first 75 to put it in context?
Yeah, I mean, he was
missing
lost
out on a lot of the story at this point.
I mean, that's why there's no story to be had. They ran out around 70, I think.
That'll do it. Anyways, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
We'll be right back.